is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, is in Perth, Australia, looking at Ukraine, and then we're going to turn our attention to the Solomon Islands, and then we'll turn our attention to the larger Indo-Pacific contest for the rest of this century. But right now, Gregory's observations of the air war in Ukraine, especially conducted by the Russian air forces. Gregory makes the point that there is no separate entity called the air war. It is integrated into the land, the sea, and what you'd say is non-kinetic warfare. However, we're going to address some unanswered questions since the February 24th conflict. Gregory, a very good day to you in Perth. On the other side of the world, you see Ukraine from a special point of view of what this means for the Indo-Pacific, what it means for the Atlantic alliances. Right now, what does it mean for Russia? Did we misunderstand the Russian rebuild since the end of the Soviet days? You make the salient point in your essay. It is early in a conflict. It's 2 months in. And as the Civil War General Grant and his colleagues said, God smiles on the largest army, and Russia has the largest army if and when. It certainly has the largest air force now. So the question that first comes to mind is, my understanding is that if you're going to take on a near peer or even a subpar peer, you're going to blind it right away on the first day when you have surprise. Certainly, the German Air Force in 1941 attacked the Soviet airfields right away, catching most of the Soviet fleet on the ground. Did that happen with Ukraine and we've just had it badly reported? Or did the Russians forego that idea of blind them on the first day? Good day to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Great to be with you. And the reality, of course, perhaps more salient than the quote about the Civil War generals, was Stalin's quote was that God is on the side of the big battalions. And the reality is that the Russians, when they invaded Ukraine on this occasion, didn't go in with the big battalions. They went in with limited aims and objectives and limited goals for the total war. So they went in very, very quickly with a strong air power-based attack on key Ukrainian targets and diversionary attacks, particularly in western Ukraine, so that they could divert the attention of the Ukrainian armed forces over to the west, which would enable the Russians to achieve their land objectives in eastern Ukraine and southern Ukraine. So the air war, in terms of its offensive operation, was very short, sharp, and initially very, very successful. It suppressed a lot of air defenses. It suppressed a lot of airfields. But then, inexplicably to Western observers, it stopped. Now, that report of ours to which you alluded was by retired U.S. Air Force Major General Dale Myros and a colleague called Stephen Ryan, and they were analyzing as part of our overall view analysis of the total war. They were looking at the air war components. And it's quite right that this was inexplicable to Western observers, and that's why they were very hesitant to draw full conclusions. But the Russians knew that they would meet strong resistance very, very quickly. I think they were anxious to make their point while limiting losses. Those losses have been considerable, particularly because of the effectiveness of U.S. And West British technologies, which were given to the Ukrainian forces, not just in the anti-air element, but also in the anti-armor element. So essentially what we saw was that the Russians went in to Ukraine with the objective of really driving Ukrainian forces out of the Donbass and out of areas, if you like, linking the southern Donbass and Mariupol with the Crimea, but also with the aim of tying down Ukrainian forces in the west, particularly around the major cities like Kiev and in the south, Odessa, which the Russians have not really sought to occupy. They've sought to just distract and not even put a full stranglehold on those cities. So they didn't use their full air power. they moved very quickly to phase two, which was the use of standoff weapons, particularly some air delivered, but particularly artillery delivered, long range artillery, which including rockets and missiles and the like. And that's been relatively effective. The question is whether this is, would have been the way the West would have conducted the war. And it clearly is not the way the West would have won the, prosecuted the war. But then the West would have been, would have seen its objective as going in to conquer the whole country, a la Iraq or Afghanistan and the like. And we have to bear in mind that, that the West did not succeed very well in Afghanistan. So the criticisms of the Russian air war were basically that its pilots were inexperienced, which is absolutely the case, but and saying that they weren't getting enough training hours, that they were only flying about 100 hours or so per year with advanced combat aircraft. Totally insufficient. The interesting thing is that the United States now is flying its combat pilots, its fighter and strike pilots, with about 120 hours per year. And this is also insufficient. So it's interesting to, yes, criticize the Russians for being perhaps less than efficient in their coordination of air power and the strikes in Ukraine. But could the West have done that much better? I think they would have done a degree better. But U.S. pilots today are getting about the same level of training hours that Russian pilots are getting.
We're looking now at the war as 2 months later, and the questions about air power still pertain. Gregory, we both remember the anecdote, or perhaps it's apocryphal, of the German army asking in Normandy, where is the Luftwaffe, on D-Day and the days afterwards? And it occurs to me that the Russian army on the ground might be asking the same thing as we go forward into the war. But in between February 24th and now is another question that I wonder if the Russians pondered. Will NATO impose a no-fly zone? And what conclusion they drew from that? Were they preparing for a no-fly zone? Were they holding back until NATO deployed? Or was that always assumed in Moscow to be a bridge too far for NATO?
I think Moscow always assumed that was a bridge too far for NATO. It would have been foolhardy for NATO to have attempted an air domination or an air denial region. And in fact, NATO has not considered it. The US certainly has spoken very strongly against it because it's too provocative. The reality is that finally, it's been realized that creating an air denial zone over Ukraine is absolutely gives it no maneuvering room vis-a-vis the Russian Air Force or Russian air defenses, more particularly on the ground in either Russia itself or Belarus. So NATO is not going to do that until the Biden administration says it's prepared to go to a full-scale direct kinetic confrontation with Russia. And we have no indication that that the Biden administration is at this stage prepared to do that. So an air exclusion zone is not on the cards. However, Russia knew that there would be Western-based air defense systems going in there, and they would be effective, particularly against helicopters. And it's probably true that had the Russians had a longer preparation time for this invasion, they would have coordinated a lot better their activities. But they certainly were not contemplating a major conflict with the West, nor that it was going to, that it be, should be one of total suppression of Ukrainian defenses. The objective was to tie down Ukrainian forces outside of the Donbass area so that Russia and the Donbass troops could deal with the Azov battalions and the forces in the east.
I'm speaking with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're addressing an essay appearing at Defense and Foreign Affairs by his colleagues about, in particular, the Russian conduct of its air element during the 2 months of the war. This is, according to U.S. intelligence, the beginning of a long conflict that Russia means to prosecute the war for indefinite future, and that it has other surprises. However, we're going to come back and talk about the air war now and going forward in the immediate future, because large anti-air systems are entering in. Also, the U.S. intelligence is using air elements to augment the Ukrainian ability to counteroffensive. Is that something that the Russians plan for, and do they have an answer for? I'm John Batchelor.